You are listening to The Perks of Being a Book Lover, a show featuring two friends who've been in the same book club for almost 20 years.
I'm Carrie. My co-host Amy is an eternally curious person. She even wanted to know what dessert my husband purchased for Mother's Day. Late for Amy, she sent me a text wanting to know. I had already forgotten that he had purchased dessert.
Well, it was a burning question. I had been thinking about it all day because, well, obviously it's dessert. I want to know what he picked. And I'm Amy. My co-host Carrie is a person who likes to be in charge, but what she really wanted for Mother's Day is not to make any decisions, like what kind of dessert should her husband buy from the bakery, which is why I wanted to know what he bought. See, it all comes around full circle here.
It does. It does. Basically, we're opposites, but we find common ground on our shared love of books. Each week, we chat about what we're reading with each other and sometimes a special guest.
We also dabble in other topics like books in the news, recent book-inspired films, our TBR counts, and general things that tease our brains. We're so glad you're with us today.
This week, we have our annual summer reading episode with our favorite bookseller, Sam Miller, store manager at Carmichael's Bookstore in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, by this point in our spring season of episodes, we are tired. So having Sam on and letting her do the heavy lifting on book suggestions is what we are all about. Sam clues us in to some new fiction, nonfiction, traditional summer reading, mystery, sci-fi, fantasy, and children's books that you may want to scoop up before your vacation or whatever, just things you might want to check out.
But first, what do we want to talk about? Do you have any summer reading plans, Carrie?
Well, so I have started putting your feet to the fire a little bit. So you have really good ideas about episodes we should do, but I need like a head start on a lot of these. And so I have said, Amy, we need to pick so that I can like ramp up my reading in the summer, because once the school year starts, I sort of never know what my schedule is going to be like and how much time I will get to do reading. So I will probably be doing some prep work reading in relation to our show.
Well, I am going to do some of that too. We have some fun episodes for our second season of 2024. I'd like to do an episode about space. I'd like to do an episode about Los Angeles. We have some fun episodes planned. So you're trying to read some of those. I, on the other hand, am leaving on vacation in 3 weeks and realized I have not read any books about the place that I'm visiting, and it is stressing me out. So today I have put in all of my library requests for books about South Africa, because I am going to South Africa with my husband and my daughter at the end of May, May 31st, which is when our summer hiatus begins. This past Saturday, we participated in the How To Festival, which is an event that the Louisville Free Public Library does every year. We participated with the local radio station that our show airs on, Forward Radio, 106.5 here in Louisville. And we volunteered for that the last few years, and we are at the table and we have people record like station identifications and promos and things like that, which is kind of fun. And that's how we actually got our start, was going to a how-to festival, learning how to do a podcast, learning how to record. So it's fun to be on the receiving end, but their tagline is you should be able to learn how to do 50 things in 5 hours, which, you know, that might be a little pie in the sky there, but you can learn how to do fun things. Like, someone told us that there was a session about laughter yoga. And I'm like, what the heck is laughter yoga? So I looked it up.
Yeah, because you're curious.
I am curious. So I looked up laughter yoga, and there's all these like YouTube laughter yoga workouts. And I'm going to have to check it out because I was not able to go to the session.
So what is it?
It's a yoga practice that brings together traditional yoga, breathing exercises, and laughter. Laughing yoga can help shake off stress, boost your immune system, and foster a sense of connection and community, bringing truth to the saying that laughter just might be the best medicine. That is from the calm.com website. Anyway, that's what it is. I might have to check it out because I do love to laugh. I think everybody feels better once they've laughed.
Yeah, but is it like fake laugh, like ha 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 ha, like, you know, you're just breathing and laughing?
Yeah, I guess it would have to be, wouldn't it? Unless they had like a comedian in there while you're doing yoga, which
I don't know. Maybe they play a George Carlin tape. I don't know.
They had a miniature donkey there for a session about how to raise livestock in an urban area. My daughter and her two roommates from college, they came to it. And in the area where we were set up, they had different kinds of like active sessions. Like there was one about how to line dance. And my daughter and her friends were over there. And you and I were sort of bopping to the music. And I was tempted to get up and dance with my daughter and her friends, but I thought that she would be terribly horrified and embarrassed. And since the next day was Mother's Day, that I might get nuttin' for Mother's Day.
Yeah. I told you could go in the corner. You could just get up and go in the corner by yourself.
That's even more embarrassing. Some weird person dancing in the corner? Come on.
It would have been funny.
That's what we did this past weekend. And then we met one of our listeners, Bethany, and we went out for cheese and wine, and that was a good time. And
actually, you know, we need to call her by her official name. Groupie. That's what I started calling her. Or maybe she started calling herself that. But she was taking pictures of us at the How To Festival. And so now I jokingly hashtag everything with Perks Groupie.
All right. Anything else? That's all I got.
You know what? We spent our Saturday at the How To Festival. But Sam Miller is the person that everybody should know and turn to when they need help on how to pick a good summer read. As usual, when our favorite bookseller, Sam from Carmichael's Bookstore, comes around, Amy and I sit back, do nothing, and we let Sam take the reins, do whatever she wants to do. So this is another episode where we have Sam.
I love these episodes because I am at heart kind of lazy. And I love Sam just telling me about all the new fun books that are coming.
It is very exciting. It's very exciting.
For two people who work as hard as you do on this podcast, that doesn't really track. But I'm always happy to be here in the studio recording with you. But yeah, we're kind of here to talk about summer reading. And as ever, we always just have the disclaimer that this is just a selection of new things that kind of caught my interest, or I thought that might be of interest to you guys especially. This is certainly not meant as an exhaustive list of all the new releases that are coming out in the spring and summer. Certainly not. Just some things to think about and maybe some things to catch people's ear as they're listening to your podcast.
Okay, I just thought of a question.
Yes.
So do you think that there's a difference between the type of books that come out like pre-holiday shopping and the type of books that come out pre-summer, aside from summery or wintry, besides seasonal things? Do you feel like there's a difference in terms of what comes out?
I do. I do. It's sort of like the Oscars, I think, where like the serious movies come out in the fall mostly with an eye towards award season in the beginning of the following year. I kind of feel similarly about books, that if a publisher has an important release that they feel like is going to do very well and, you know, be on those kind of short lists and award lists, that maybe they will save it for fall because, you know, for the big holiday season. And so it's more top of mind when you get to award season. But I don't know if that's a strict thing at all anymore, because we have a new release like Percival Everett's new one, James, which is a retelling of Huck Finn from Jim's point of view. And I'm certain it's going to win tons of awards. I mean, it's gotten so many great reviews. Everyone at the store who's read it is amazed, again, by Mr. Everett's writing and his ability to kind of transform things that we all thought we knew into something completely new and unexpected. And it came out in March. So I don't know that that's a hard and fast rule. Or maybe it's not as hard and fast rule as it used to be. I think everything in publishing is a little more loosey-goosey than it used to be. I mean, you still have the big five publishers, of course, but some of the gatekeeping has been removed because people can self-publish, or there's, you know, a million and one ways to do it now. So maybe that's kind of loosened up traditional modes of doing things.
Okay. I do think, though, traditionally, summer reads are sort of like your summer movies a little bit.
Sure.
Like
adventure or
splashy, like a little bit more splashy, maybe a little more
big dumb fun.
Big dumb fun. Yes. Big dumb fun.
I think there's certainly some of that, but there's certainly lots of literary stuff that comes out in the spring too. So again, you're going back, you know, what is a summer read? It's like, well, a summer read is what you like to read. Right. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, depending on people's lives, that's the time they have to read. So it might be the time, instead of something silly and frivolous, that they'll be reading something heavy because that's when they have more time to devote to it instead of the normal grind of life or whatever.
I mean, that's where Lin-Manuel Miranda read the book that later inspired Hamilton.
Oh, was on the wrong turn now. Yeah.
Yes. And that's definitely not a big dumb fun.
But I can see, I mean, because I would like to read James. That's going to be a bigger, longer read. And so that would be a summer just because I have more time.
Sure, sure.
Well, let's get into it. What you got for us?
Well, starting with fiction, one of the ones I'm most looking forward to and an author I've spoken to you guys about a lot is Catherine Newman. She had a book a couple years ago called We All Want Impossible Things, which was one of my books of the year that year. She has her sophomore novel coming out, and it comes out in June. It's called Sandwich. And it is about a family that goes on vacation together. So it's perfect for summer. And everything's going great because they're going to the place they always go and they're doing the things they always do. And it's all great and tradition until it's not great. Mm-hmm. The matriarch, Rocky, is also going through menopause. So she's hot flashing like crazy, which always makes any kind of close and maybe, contact with people really fun.
And maybe her moods are a little erratic.
Yes. And there's also things that she has pushed down from the past that, in this close setting with her family, kind of start to bubble up in ways that are, you know, she's kind of unprepared for. So I really think it's great. It's another like big, messy family that I'm like, please, I want you to adopt me. I want to be part of this because they have very witty banter because she's such a smart writer. So I was super stoked that she had a second book. And then always a little nervous, of course, when you have someone's sophomore novel that you love their first one, you're like, oh, please be good. Please be good. Yeah. Please be good. And it was great. So I was really glad about that.
Does Sandwich refer to where they go to vacation?
No.
Oh, okay.
But it's great that you bring that up, Amy, because she does one of those things that I love as a reader, where a title is or a phrase is used every possible way it could mean throughout the work. So it's about what you eat. It's about what generation she's in because she's, she has, they're on vacation with her elderly parents, but also her children. So, yes, it has several meanings, but they're not going to Sandwich.
Okay.
That sounds like I might have to read that. When did you say it comes out?
June? It comes out June 18th.
Oh, I'll be just back from a Sandwich vacation with my parents and my children.
Either you'll want to dive into it or it'll be the last thing you want to read, depending on how your own trip goes.
This.
Like, no, I just live that. I don't need to read it. Another one I'm excited about is Jodi Picoult. Obviously, she's previously been known for like kind of ripped from the headlines fiction, which she does very well. And then the last one, Mad Honey, she had a co-author, which she'd never had done before. And then this time, it is called By Any Other Name. And it is historical fiction, which she's never done before. And it is about the woman who actually wrote Shakespeare's work and a woman who's investigating Shakespeare in the present. So we have dual timelines, historical fiction from her for the first time. So as a Shakespeare lover, I'm going to be all over this one.
Me too. Me too. That sounds really good.
I feel like there's been a lot of Shakespeare things coming out lately, like mystery series and Hamnet. And it seems like there's sort of this
resurgence of Shakespeare interest.
Yes.
I don't know that it ever goes away.
Well, yeah, I think he's kind of evergreen.
Yeah. I guess I feel like there's just a lot of authors, maybe there always has been, but a lot of authors who are trying to, you know,
reimagine,
rediscover Shakespeare in a different way.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, if you have a great story like that, it lends itself to that. And that's one of the hallmarks, I think, of a great story is you can make it a YA or you can make it sci-fi or you can make it whatever. And it still holds up because the story is so strong.
I read all the Shakespeare books. Or, well, not all of them, but a lot of them.
Another one I'm excited about, I've actually already read it, but I'm excited to sell it to people, is Colm Tobin. It comes out in May. It's called Long Island, and it's the sequel to his novel Brooklyn, which I loved. I love Brooklyn the book, and I love Brooklyn the movie.
Yeah.
And I read and rewatched both before I read the new book. So I didn't even know that this was in the works. I thought the story just ended there. And it doesn't. So I was incredibly happy about that. It's a very interesting turn that it takes because it's set far in the future. So Eilish has been married 20-ish years, has children of her own. And then, you know, her husband throws a monkey wrench in their life. And so she ends up going back to Ireland to try to figure out what she's going to do and how she's going to cope with this change that's happened to her in her life. And it revisits the past that we saw in Brooklyn as an older woman with more experience and a family of her own.
Oh, I saw the movie, love the movie. I've not read the book, but that might be a good impetus for me to read Brooklyn and then read that.
Well, it's interesting. And I think it's due to the actors being so great in the movie that when I think of Brooklyn, my first thought was how romantic it was. There is romance in the book. And the movie is very faithful to the plot of the book, but it's just the acting, I think, imbues it, the relationship, with a lot more romance and warmth than it was actually on the page. So it was interesting to revisit both and be like, oh, this is interesting. And then read the new thing and be like, oh.
So when you rereading it, you kind of saw maybe some chinks or issues that come up later, do you think?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
At least I didn't, except for everything happening fairly quickly and without a lot of life experience. Like, as you know, a middle-aged person, I'm always like, oh, you should date more. You don't need to settle down so early. Let's sow a few wild oats and have a little fun before you make that final call.
Gotcha. But,
he's a beautiful writer, and I'm always impressed with his interiority of his characters. So, like, high marks from me, especially if you love Brooklyn, then good news, there's a sequel.
Cool.
Another one that is out already for people who love Peace Like a River, Leif Unger has a new book called I Cheerfully Refuse. But it's wildly different than some of his other things because it's dystopian. Mm-hmm. In it, Lake Superior is sentient, which is okay, a big body of water to have consciousness. Hmm. And a musician has been separated from his bookseller wife. Hello, bookseller. I love that. And so he's trying to navigate to try to find her.
So, navigate, like, on Lake Superior?
Yes, which has consciousness.
Ooh, that's bizarro.
Yes. I have not read it. It's still in my TBR. But my understanding is, obviously, it's completely different than everything he's done. Yeah. But he brings the strength of character that he's always been known for to dystopian to really good results, but very unexpected and, like, not something I would have, like, who's the next author to write a dystopian? He would not have been on my list to pick that.
Yeah. So.
When does that one come out?
It is already out.
Oh.
You can
buy
it
today. That would be good for your vacation.
I know, because I'm going to Wisconsin. So
that's not Lake Superior, I don't think, is it?
Technically, it's Lake Michigan, but it's, you know, it's really close.
Yeah. So if Lake Superior's sentient, why not Lake Michigan?
If you're heading north and you're anywhere near Lake Superior, maybe that would be. And, you know.
Now that you bring that up, though, I'm kind of curious, like, it, you know, so considering the lakes all are connected.
Yeah. Right.
Like, how could only one
be
sentient? So,
I assume that's explained, or maybe it's not explained. It's just that's the body of water we happen to be on. So,
yeah. Mm.
But as far as more traditional summer reads, I do want to mention that Emily Henry has a new one coming out.
Ellen Hildenbrand.
Yes. Well, they're the summer writers.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Ellen Hildenbrand has a new one. Emily Giffen also has a new one, but hers is also a little bit different. It comes out in July. It's called The Summer Pact. It's actually just a friendship novel. And I don't mean to say just, like, that's less, but it's not a romance. Mm. Like, there is zero romance in it. It is a story about friends who go to college together, then come apart, and then come back together again as adults because of a pact they made, I assume, in the summer, given the title. Hmm. So I thought that was kind of interesting that you would, like, zero romance, just friendship.
So with Leif Unger and with Emily Giffen, I always love it when authors break out of sort of a genre or a mold that they have for themselves. But I bet it's also scary because their fans who are, especially like Emily Giffen, I mean, romance readers are all in, devoted, you know, and for her to switch to something that's maybe adjacent, but not exactly what she has written in the past. It doesn't have that same, like, you know what you're getting.
Sure.
Right.
I'm with you. I appreciate that in authors, like, especially so many books in, if an author's taking a chance, because I feel like you didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, the publisher probably would have been perfectly happy to be like, okay, here's my
just keep doing what you do.
Exactly.
Right?
So, no, I appreciate that. And hopefully it's met with success in both cases. And hopefully, you know, I always hate to be the fan, although admit I have sometimes been the fan of, like, I like your older stuff better. But yes, I always, you know, I try to keep an open mind until I read the book.
Especially. Let them take a swing.
And yes, exactly.
You know, they can always go back to what they did before, but it must get, I would think, as a
tedious
writer, it would get tedious, mm-hmm. sort of writing books that are kind of in the same vein.
Right. Well, I think about music, and I mean, we're of an age where U2 was very popular, and so everybody wanted Joshua Tree. And so they came out with Octung Baby and all the weird stuff, which I sort of like, because I was like, they're not the same people they were when they wrote Joshua Tree. To me, I think to expect somebody to keep doing the same things that they did, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous.
And I think they get terribly bored of singing those songs on that particular album.
So I feel like that, if you're a creative person, I feel like people asking you to not expand your creativity is really sort of unfair to whatever artist or whatever, you know, format you're in. I think that's unfair for people to expect that of you.
I agree. And I think hopefully, especially the artists that you love, will have a long career. And not every record is going to be your favorite. Not every book is going to be your favorite. Right. But it's going to be a long arc. And maybe that'll be interesting, too, of they started here and they ended up here.
Right, right.
I also wanted to mention Claire Kilroy. She's an Irish author. She has a book coming out in June called Soldier Sailor. It was longlisted for the Booker Prize. And a lot of the Booker Prize books, even though it is now open to a North American author's eye, most of them are still from Europe. And many times it'll be available there for several years before it comes over here. And that's the case with this one. So it was actually nominated for the longlist for the Booker 2 years ago. And it's finally coming out. The people I know who've read her think that she's absolutely dynamite and say this is her best one yet. And essentially, it's about a woman whose personality completely changes when she becomes a mother.
Mm.
In, like, haunting and maybe terrifying ways.
Ooh.
So pretty much you have me at Irish Fiction.
Me too.
So I'm always willing to try somebody, even if I'm unfamiliar with their work. So I'm looking forward to checking this one out.
It also sounds a little bit like a book that came out a couple years ago that's being made into, I think, a limited series or a movie called Night Bitch. Are you familiar with that book? I can't think of the name of the author right now, but it's about a woman who has a child and then she kind of like gradually turns into a wolf, I think, or some kind of animal.
Rachel Yoder.
It sounds like it's kind of in that vein, but it seems like there's a lot of books out like that right now. Because we interviewed an author, Katrina Monroe, who's a horror writer, but her horror is a little bit about things changing when you become a mother. So
because that actually happens.
Because that actually happens, yeah.
So. Well, and it's an interesting idea to play with, mm-hmm. I'm sure, because it happens to every woman.
Mm-hmm.
But, you all don't turn into wolves.
We don't turn into wolves.
That you know of.
Right, exactly. But that's a large spectrum to play with
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
between here and wolfdom. As far as new nonfiction, obviously there is nonfiction still out there coming out, of course, for people who don't enjoy fiction as much or just want a change of pace. One that has just come out at the time we're recording this is Salman Rushdie's memoir called Knife, which is, judging by the title, of course, about the attack. And my understanding is that he actually had a dream 2 days before the attack happened that the attack was going to happen, but went through with the performance anyway.
Oh.
Oh,
wow.
I didn't know that. Which is not something I knew. But certainly, even if you're not a fan of his fiction or if you've never read him before, I don't think that you can make the argument that there's a modern writer who has done more or sacrificed more for the written word and free speech. So respect to
because that fatwa is still against him. I mean, they I think it's still out.
Well, I'm not an expert in such matters. I think that the new administrations, or if that's even the right word, regimes post Ayatollah Khomeini had tamped it down, not completely reversed it.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Let's not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, not everyone got the message.
Okay.
But again, I'm not an expert in such matters, but there was kind of an embargo on reviews until the last minute for this being published, so I haven't heard a bunch of how the book actually is, but mm-hmm. obviously given his skills, I don't think it's going to stink.
Yeah.
And, when we talk about, like, books you were born to write, in this sad case, it's definitely true. Also, narrative nonfiction favorite, Eric Larson has a new one out that's already out. It's called The Demon of Unrest. It's about Fort Sumter and the start of the Civil War.
Mm.
Dad book?
Dad book.
Yes, book.
If we're going to go dad book. One of my favorites, Francine Prose, has her first nonfiction out. She's normally a novelist, and she's like a wide-ranging novelist. She's written about all sorts of things. But her new one's called 1974, which is about the year 1974. It's a memoir, and it's a personal history of her relationship with the Pentagon paper leaker Tony Russo.
Mm-hmm.
So she really had an inside view of how all that unfolded in 74. And this is the first time she's talked about it. So
wow.
I'm interested. This is her first nonfiction. So it surprises me because she's such a wide-ranging novelist. But again, with the story that you were born to write, it's like you have this unique perspective and she's finally sharing it.
Hmm.
Also already out is The Backyard Bird Chronicles by Amy Tan, which is also mm-hmm. new nonfiction from her.
Mm-hmm.
She, I don't know if it was pre-pandemic or just in life, is a huge avid birder. And she has essentially written a bunch of short, like kind of bite-sized essays about backyard birds and more of what's known as slow birding. So not necessarily like working on your birding list, going to Peru to see these wild, but seeing the birds where you are
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or noticing them where you are.
And I think that she did all the illustrations in
she
it
did,
as well.
Yes.
She's an artist or a...
Or really good at drawing birds.
Likes to draw birds and would do that in her birding practice.
Yeah.
And they're included.
That mm-hmm. seems like a really good book for everybody you know who turned 40. You know how like
yes.
suddenly you get to a certain age and you're like, birds.
Yeah.
Aren't they nice to look at? You know, like
I agree with that 100%, Carrie. And because I have a bird feeder in my backyard. For the cats, in air quotes, and they do watch it, but I watch it more than they do.
Yeah.
And I'm the one who's like, oh, look, oh, look,
yeah,
a woodpecker.
Yeah.
What's that yellow one?
Yeah.
So
what's yes. he doing? Why is he doing that? That's so weird. Yeah.
I downloaded that app called Merlin, I think it is.
Yes.
Where you can get
bird sounds.
It'll identify the bird sounds for you.
That's how I finally figured out it's the bird that sounds like a car alarm. And I was like, what is that bird? And so I used Merlin and it identified a mockingbird. And then I started Googling and you will actually, if you Google that, you will find which bird sounds like a car alarm. So apparently that wasn't my original idea. And so it helped me figure that out.
Well, that makes sense though, because that's where their name comes from, right? Because they mock sound. So if the sound they were hearing was a car alarm, yeah, that's going to be the bird that sounds like a car alarm.
It's so weird because they change. Like they'll be like, I mean, I never would have had this conversation when I was 25. Never. Anyway, carry on.
The blessings of age. Another really interesting one that's already out is called Sociopath.
Oh, I
it's by Patrick Ganji. It's a memoir from a therapist who is a sociopath who describes her experience getting diagnosed and living with this. How it affects the work that she does, and her discovery that the whole profession, even though they're supposed to be professionals, is wildly full of stereotypes about what that means.
Hmm.
And that really affects how those people are cared for and are able to live their lives. Because it has such a negative connotation. It's almost like a dirty word when you're talking about mental health. And, you know, how that is such a huge hurdle for the people who are that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's what's fascinating.
You know, 99.9% of, you know, never kill anybody and live average lives and whatever. So, and the fact that she would become a therapist was extremely interesting to me because I was like, would that make you a better one because you could be very dispassionate, or would that make you a worse one because you lack empathy? So, I don't know. I've not read it. The people at the store who've read it thought it was really terrific and just like very unexpected, like not a book that you would have ever seen coming down the road. And kind of once you hear it, you're like, wow, that's interesting. And I want to hear what she has to say.
Yeah.
I heard the author interviewed somewhere, probably on NPR. And it was interesting to hear her talk about what it was like growing up. Like she knew that she was a little bit different and didn't necessarily have the same emotions as other kids her age. And anyway, it was fascinating. And I've wanted to read it since I heard her. Yeah, that would be a good one.
Another one that I'm sure is going to be a bestseller and I'm kind of looking forward to because I'm a huge fan of hers, Doris Kearns Goodwin, the historian, if you've seen a documentary, I'm sure, or in a Ken Burns movie, she has a new book out called An Unfinished Love Story. And this is kind of a heart project for her because it's a personal history of the 1960s that she did in collaboration with her late husband. At the end of his life, they were going through memorabilia and, you know, things that they had collected over the years, and they realized they had a huge treasure trove of stuff because of their two careers of that time. He said, hey, why don't you write a book about this? And that was their project for the last few years of his life.
Uh-huh.
She said it gave him so much meaning and purpose because he wasn't just like waiting around for life to end. He would wake up and say, let's work on the book today, or what are we going to do on the book today? So she is a historian who writes with heart all the time, but I feel like this is like a passion project for her for real. So, and the book has some lovely photos too of like all this ephemera that they've collected and, you know, photos of them during those days.
Wow. Hmm.
So it could be a dad or a mom book, I guess.
It could be a dad or a mom.
Let's segue into mystery.
Yes.
There's a Tana French book.
Okay.
Which is makes me happy. It came out in March, and it's the sequel to The Searcher. It's called The Hunter. And the second book in this series, we're again following Cal Hooper, who's a Chicago cop who retired and moved to a tiny village in Ireland because he wanted some peace and quiet. And as always happens in mystery books, that's not what happened. And in the first one, she used a lot of Western tropes, like Western's the genre, which apply to Western Ireland as well as they do to Western America. But this one, like she already did the world building in the first book. So this one kind of dives deep into the plot. Like it doesn't have to do that because you've already read the first one. But in it, he has a adopted daughter, protege, Trey. And Trey's dad is a feckless, no good, so-and-so. But he comes back to the village with this get-rich scheme that's going to make all of them wealthy. And then, of course, everybody gets pulled into that, including Cal.
So you definitely need to have read the first one to read the second
one. I would say yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She does do a little bit of catching you up, but it won't hit you near as hard if you haven't read the first one. Mm-hmm. Because what he does with Trey, the young woman, and how she's trying to be young and inexperienced in life, but also balance all these adults in her life and trying to keep something terrible from happening is heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking that she is would be put in that position, and it's heartbreaking to see her try to navigate that. And I was kudos to Tana French. I mean, she does good characters and great dialogue all the time, but I think this time she's really outdone herself. Mm-hmm. Another one, as far as for the folks who like the locked room mysteries, there's new Ruth Ware and new Lucy Foley.
Wow.
So those would be great for your vacation or your plane trip. Ruth Ware, Perfect Couple, comes out the end of May. Trapped on an Island. Mm. Yes. That's, Midnight Feast, new resort opening. Yeah. And we're very excited at Carmichael's because we are going to host Lucy Foley for an event on June 20th.
Oh, awesome.
Cool.
So, yes, we expect that to be huge.
Yeah.
She has tons and tons of fans. Another one I'm looking forward to reading comes out in August. It's by Fiona McFarlane, who's an Australian writer. It's called Highway 13. And in Australia, like a lot of other places in the world, that haven't had the same experience with serial killers or mass murders as we have in America. So when it does happen over there, it's incredibly memorable because it's rare, unlike here, sadly. So apparently in the 1990s, there were some especially brutal hitchhiker murders, and that's what this novel is about. And apparently, if you go to Australia and talk about, just say hitchhiker murders, everyone knows what you're talking about. So I'm looking forward to reading that. And then another one I've already read and can totally vouch for comes out in June, on June 11th, by Liz Moore, who wrote This Bright River a couple years ago that ended up on President Obama's summer reading list that year. It's called God of the Woods. It is one of the best plotted books I have ever read in my whole life, which sounds like, if that's the best thing you can say about a book, it sounds like maybe you didn't like it or it wasn't good in other ways, which is absolutely not true. But it's about summer camp in the Adirondacks, and a camper goes missing, which is bad, except it's the second time in this particular family that a child has gone missing, which makes it even worse. But one of our protagonists is a young female detective on her first case, so that's fantastic. But we get the camper side, which is also fantastic and full of lots of young adult drama. It's really wide and sweeping, and like I said, it's so perfectly plotted. I loved it. It also has maybe so far my favorite cover of the year.
Oh.
Which, when you see it, you're like, oh, well, that's okay. But after you read it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's a perfect cover. And it's a good example of, I think, the designer or artist actually either reading the book or delving deep into the description of the book. It's very specific, and you have to have read the book to know what the cover's about. So, also something I appreciate, especially as a bookseller. Sometimes I'm very cover conscious.
Mm.
Okay. So I am holding myself back because you have mentioned so many books that I just want to put on my TBR.
Good.
You're really doing a nice job.
Thanks. You
know, yeah.
That's my aim. Moving on to sci-fi and slash horror, another one I can personally vouch for, which comes out in May, which is definitely in the running for being my favorite book of the year, and definitely in the running for being maybe the staff favorite of the year so far, because five of us have read it so far and five of us have loved it. It's called The Ministry of Time by Kayleen Bradley, and it has a fascinating premise, especially for me.
So you read it? Because you're not a big sci-fi fantasy reader.
Exactly right. Okay. And you know how it got me? Polar exploration, time travel.
Oh, yeah.
Two of the things that I do love.
I do love that.
In one book. So the premise is, in slightly future London, there's this secret ministry of time that's determined to bring back Brits from the past to the present to investigate time travel. How does it affect the people? Could those people be used in certain ways based on their knowledge or skills from the past in the present? And what happens to their bodies and their coping mechanisms? Like, is it a viable plan? And could it be, of course, because it's government, could it be exploited for gain in some nefarious way?
Sort of like they do for space travel, you know, like astronauts that come back, they check all their bodily functions and things and say, how did space affect them? So it's like a similar idea.
Exactly.
Time travel.
But our protagonist is a young woman who works for the Ministry of Time, who is essentially like this polar explorer's person. Like, she's their guide to the modern world. Like, she lives with him. She takes care of him as far as like teaching him how to navigate and cope with what is wildly different than what he was used to. And, you know, things ensue. There's romance, there's time travel, there's adventure, there's suspense. It's just a wonderful grab bag of things.
So you said it has to do with the polar exploring. So are the people coming back, are they from like the fated trip where a bunch of people died on the...
Like the Terror?
Yes.
Oh! Ooh.
They bring back many different people. They're trying to pluck people out who already died, so they're not affecting the time continuum after them because they've already died. But they need to get them before they die, obviously, or else then things will be messed up. So there's that. So they picked one person who was like a lieutenant on the John Franklin expedition, which, yes, was ill-fated. Yes, there was cannibalism.
Yeah.
Yes, Lady Franklin sent out three more expeditions trying to find him.
Yeah.
Those people also died.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, I was totally hooked when someone said polar exploration and time travel, but it was so much more than that. And it's one of those great books that has a little bit of everything. So if you love a good romance, there's some good romance in there, because she's Cambodian and British, our protagonists. So there's stuff about being, you know, other, and how that is, and how, you know, how does that work in that time? And what does that mean for her career and how that works? So it's just very, very, very interesting, and just a lot to chew on and think about. I highly recommend it.
Hmm.
Okay, so I have to ask this question. So when you have, you know, that many Carmichael's booksellers reading a book, does this happen because everybody just happens to pick up that book, or does it happen because some, you know, the kind of like the hair thing, she told two friends and she told two friends? Is that, how does it happen?
It's more like the latter.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
We'll get multiple copies, so those are taken. Mm-hmm. But then because we work so closely with each other and see each other's recommends, and we're talking to each other about books all the time, we know, oh, this is a total carry book. So then I'm going to say, you have to read this next. And then you have to, and then like an ad hoc list will come up.
Gotcha. Okay.
Same thing happened with the Heaven and Earth grocery store last year. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody just passed it on to the next person who loved it, passed it on to the next person who loved it. So, okay. Which is, I mean, we are a disparate group of readers. Mm-hmm. In the Venn diagram of Carmichael's, there is a middle, but it's kind of a skinny middle. Mm-hmm. So for when you're talking about that many booksellers all liking the same book, it's usually a good sign.
Okay. All right.
Also, one that we're excited for at Carmichael's, because we're all huge Keanu Reeves fans, his first novel is coming out.
Oh.
It's written with China Myville, who's, of course,
I just finished one of his books.
And if you're a comic book fan, you know Keanu Reeves has written many comic books. This novel is set in that world from his Berserker comic books.
Oh, okay.
And so he asked China, will you collaborate with me? And so he apparently like said, this is the world, explained everything. This is what the plot of the book, this is what I think should happen. And that it sounds like it was a true collaboration, not like, I'm the movie star. Here's my idea. And you're going to execute it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds like it was actually a true collaboration.
Oh, that's cool.
So I think Keanu Reeves is one of the most interesting celebrities that we have as far as being a hyphenated, you know, he's an artist. He's a this. He's a this. Yeah, he's a this. Yeah. So I'm very curious. And I'm, as you said, I'm not a sci-fi person at all, but I'm very curious about what this is going to be like. Mm. And the sci-fi people at the store are super stoked. Another one that sci-fi folks are super, I don't know if you're an Adrian Tchaikovsky fan. He has a new one coming out in June. So this one's called Service Model. And it sounds like if you like iRobot or if you're a fan of the Murderbot series, like this is going to be for you. And because it's very timely about AI going rogue. Also, sci-fi fans are super happy that we're getting a sequel to House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. It's coming out in September, so it's on the other cusp
like
of
Labor Day.
Yes, exactly. It's called Somewhere Beyond the Sea, which is a really good title for a sequel to that. So he has huge and rabid fan base, and I think they're going to be super happy that he's going back to this one because of all his books, I think this is the most beloved. So, and I think it kind of cut a wide swath. More than just sci-fi people liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one that leans more on the horror that I thought sounded interesting called The Deading by Nicholas Belardes. It comes out in July. And it's being billed as Under the Dome meets The Last of Us, which...
I'm not familiar with Under the Dome, but I like The Last of Us.
Stephen King book and miniseries where suddenly a dome appears entrapping people in a small town underneath it. And then, like, everybody goes Lord of the Flies because, you know, that's how we do.
Yeah.
But apparently it's set in a seaside village and the contagion comes from the ocean.
Mm. Oh.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Anything with contagion, don't give it to
Gary.
Yeah,
yeah, no. I'm not big
on that. But that sounds up my alley.
Well, I'm a huge Last of Us fan.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, Last of Us, Pedro Pascal.
Yes, I agree.
I'm interested.
He's such a goofy movie star and I love it.
Yeah.
Me too. Moving on to, there's a couple Kentucky titles I wanted to mention. Gail Jones, who's a Kentucky author, who's kind of like our Salinger as far as like being remote and not doing interviews and not doing press for books and continuing to have new things come out, not doing any of the other side. She has a new one coming out called Unicorn Woman. It comes out in August. And it's the World War II memories of a Black Kentucky World War II vet, including of the Unicorn Woman, a woman he met while he was overseas on leave.
Mm. You just...
I just talked about one of her books. Eva's Man. It's a book that has stuck in my head for years.
Yeah, she's terrific. And I just love that. Like, she's just like, I'm going to write the books. They're going to publish the books. And that's what you get.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to live my life. You're not going to get an interview. I'm not going to go on TV. Mm-hmm. No book club on TV is going to pick that book. And I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I like that.
I feel like Percival Everett kind of has that same mentality, but he's having to do some interviews for this. And you can tell he's not super excited about it.
Did you read the New Yorker article with him?
I don't think so.
I felt so sorry for that writer. Because it's like, this is a thankless task.
Yeah.
And because Percival Everett will just say, he just was just saying stuff the whole time. Like, that was not helpful. Like, no, no.
Yeah, he's not. He's doing the press because his publicist has said he has to. But he is.
Not cooperating.
Not about it. No.
He's not cooperating. And he's also very hard on himself. And I think it's genuine. I don't think it's his self-deprecating humor that he's saying, like, I'm not a good writer. Like, I don't know why you're trying to dive so deeply in these things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like he's at all interested in explaining his craft to you or his process or what he thinks it all stands for. He's like, that's on you all. I'm not going to do that. He's not interested in those conversations. And he also teaches, so hopefully he's interested in having those conversations with students about their work.
Yeah.
But he's not at all interested about having his own work, which I think is also refreshing. But yeah, I felt sorry for the reporters who have to yank a story out of him
because
he's an unwilling participant.
Yeah. I've interviewed people like that. And it's like, oh, God, just give me a nugget, just something.
Exactly.
Just
something. This could both be over if you just give me something.
Yeah.
Another one I wanted to mention, our National Poet Laureate, Ada Limón, who, of course, lives in Lexington, has a new collection that she has edited called You Are Here. It is a gorgeous book. And that's part of her mission as Poet Laureate. One of the things that she wanted, she had two major goals. One, to get this collection where she asked 52 other poets to write a nature poem. And then she also wanted to have, I think it's in 10 national parks, a poem permanently installed.
Oh.
And the closest one to us, I think, is in the Great Smoky National Park. But she's well on her way to accomplishing both of the goals.
You would think that Mammoth Cave would, I mean, Kentucky Poet Laureate, Kentucky National Park, but...
Well, she's the National Poet Laureate.
Yeah.
Silas House is our Kentucky Poet Laureate.
I know, but she's...
But she's from... She's not from...
Well, she's living here.
But she might not have had complete say into which parks.
That's true.
And, you know...
I'm putting a lot on her shoulders, aren't I?
I love Mammoth Cave as much as the next Kentuckian, but I think if you're going to have a poetry installation that's outside,
well, that's true.
You might be better served at a different locale.
That's true.
Or they could put it inside, and then that'd be kind of cool, too.
That would be cool. That is nature, after all.
It is. And, you know, maybe kinder than having it outside, depending on what kind of installation you're talking about. I also wanted to mention that horse racing author, whose name is Evelyn Hunter, she had a book last year called Dream Derby, which was about one of my favorite racehorses, Black Gold. This is the 100th anniversary of his win, because he won in 1924. So that's a reason, good reason to read that book. Many people know that racehorse's name because Marguerite Henry, the children's author who wrote Misty of Chincoteague, also wrote a book about Black Gold. So for many, many young readers who read that book and then grow up to be horse racing fans, like me... He's a gateway horse. So it was very interesting to, after reading that book as a child, which is, of course, written for children.
Is the name of that book Black Gold?
Yes. Marguerite Henry's book is called Black Gold.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting to read a grown-up book about it, because I've kind of wanted that my whole life. So it's like, that was...
Finally!
Exactly. Give me all the dirt. And then her new book that came out this year, because it's the 150th Kentucky Derby this year, but it's also the 150th Kentucky Oaks. So her new book is about a history of the Oaks.
Oh. And so for people who may not know, Oaks is on the Friday before the Kentucky Derby, and it's all fillies.
Correct.
Because not very many fillies make it to the Kentucky Derby. A handful have.
A handful have. Only three have won.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is on your list of the Kentucky books, but Edward Lee has a new book out about bourbon, doesn't he?
He does. For those who don't know, Ed Lee is our local famous chef. He's been listing his culinary honors would take a long time, longer than we have in this podcast. But he's a culinary superstar, and he has had two previous cookbooks/memoirs, one called Smoke and Pickles and one called Buttermilk Graffiti.
I loved Buttermilk Graffiti. That one was good. I didn't read the first one.
The new one is called Bourbon Land, and it is about bourbon. And there's also some memoir, and also kind of it's kind of a little bit of his story of falling in love with bourbon, because he wasn't always like a huge fan. But yes, it is out now, and you can get signed copies through Carmichael's.
Awesome. You got anything else on that list?
We don't normally talk about kids' books that much in these sorts of things, because the kiddos aren't necessarily your intended audience, but grown-ups who buy for kiddos are. There are two picture books I wanted to mention. One's already out, The Gaga Mistake by one of my favorites, Emma Straub, and her mom's, Susan Straub, and it's illustrated by Jessica Love, who did Julian as a Mermaid. It is about when grandma comes to visit and babysit, and how everything goes wackadoo because grandma's crazy, but we love it. So it is like the day when the kids get to cut loose.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's really sweet that they wrote it together. For those of you who don't know, Susan's husband and Emma's dad was the novelist Peter Straub, who died last year. So this was kind of their, like, we're bereaved and we're sad. What can we do? Let's write a picture book together.
I did not know that they were related.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's super sweet. And Jessica Love's illustrations are always beautiful. So they really picked well and matched those talents together.
It's like, I mean, this is the second book you've mentioned where two people, a writer and either another writer or another historian or whatever, gets together and, like, to deal with their grief, comes up with a book.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It's good therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always good to have a project to, and if you want a project to consume you, a book will do that. And then one other super fun one that I haven't seen a finished copy of, but I did read online. It's called The Squish, and it's by Brianna Cartu. It comes out at the end of May. It's about a sandcastle. It has super googly eyes, like the faux googly eyes, and gets smashed or squished, hence the title, and then bands together with another architectural sand fixture that also got squished, and they're going to try to rebuild themselves. Oh. And it's the illustrations are super cute because they're paper cut. Uh-huh. And I really love the message about like resilience and getting up when you've been knocked down.
Both of those books, I think, would be great for summer reads, because the one about the beach, I remember when we used to take our kids on summer vacation, I would try to have like a couple of little things that I would distribute throughout the week,
yeah.
you know, to keep them...
Keep things interesting.
Yeah. And the book, The Squish, sounds perfect for that, yeah. especially if you're going to the beach. And the grandma one, a lot of kids go spend time with their grandma and grandpas in the summertime.
Yes.
And so that also sounds like a really great book. So, good job, Sam. Woohoo!
We aim to please.
Well, that was a lot.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to let Sam take a big breath, and we'll come back and talk about what we're reading. But before we do that, we're going to have a fellow book lover talk about their most recent 5-star read.
Hi, this is Elizabeth, and I'm excited to share a 5-star book with you. I've selected The Berlin Letters by Catherine Ray. Disclaimer, I love historical fiction. So first of all, this is a fascinating time period that I feel is often overlooked. It covers East Berlin and Germany in Cold War and the consequences of communism and the Berlin Wall. It's a page-turning, fast, fabulous read that I read almost in a day, and I'm a slow reader. I love character growth, and there's a lot of examination on why someone may have found communism appealing, and then the consequences of what happened to Berlin throughout the Cold War. It's very well researched. There's lots of interesting facts. One of my favorites is how punk rock music and artists drove the resistance and the fall of the Berlin Wall. So I hope you enjoy it. You can find me at Elizabeth Ashley Holtzclaw on Instagram, and thanks for the invitation.
We are back. We have Sam, our favorite bookseller, here telling us all about books you may want to check out this summer reading season. And I have Carrie. Carrie, what are you reading?
So I listened to an audiobook. This particular audiobook narrator may start to think I'm stalking him. I'm not.
Oh, dear.
This was an accident. I did not know.
Hey, there are certain audiobook narrators who have fan bases.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. Because actually, at the Los Angeles Festival of Books, that was one of the panels that I signed up to go to, was audiobook narrators, because one of them is one of my favorites. So
okay.
I know, but it's a little,
that,
you know.
Sounds like stalking.
Yeah, well, a little bit. So I listened to the audiobook of Horror Store by Grady Hendrix. And this audiobook has dual narrators. And the one that is kind of the one I'm stalking is Bronson Pinchot.
Oh.
Balky. So this novel was published in 2014, and it's set in a store that is an awful lot like IKEA, but it's called Orsk. And so every chapter begins with a narration by Bronson Pinchot about a product sold by Orsk and how it will set you free and make your life wonderful and all the other gobbledygook that people believe when they are entranced by a furnishings catalog. But so it does that. And then the story is told by Amy, and it's told from her perspective. And she's kind of this middling employee who is tasked to do some reconnaissance by her store manager, Basil, to see if they can discover how the store is being vandalized. Eventually, Amy and her colleagues learn that Orsk was built on the site of a deadly prison for mentally ill, and the ghosts of this prison still call the site home. So, do the ghosts take over Orsk? Does Amy become a prisoner? Does corporate Orsk deny responsibility? Okay, yes, I will tell you. They do, because...
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, yeah. Corporations always deny responsibility. But if you want to find out the answers to the first two questions, you need to read the book to find out. So
it sounds a little bit like a novella that I read and loved and I've recommended a couple times called Fina by Nino Cipri. Mm-hmm. But that one has like a portal in this store, like an IKEA, that opens up to this other world. And I an older grandma sits down in a chair. She's there with her granddaughter, and she disappears into this portal by sitting down into this chair. Anyway,
that's well, there are tunnels. So, okay. I mean, it's portal-ish, but you're going into a terrible, terrible prison. So, anyway, it was a quick listen and fun and weird horror story by Grady Hendrix.
Yeah.
So, all right, Sam, what about you?
I am reading one called The Divorcees by Rowan Beard. It is set in the 50s, set in a divorce ranch in Reno. Obviously, if you're not familiar with American divorce history, Nevada had very lax divorce laws. So you could live there for 30 days and then apply to get a divorce, no matter if you live somewhere else in the country. So many, many people, especially women who had some money, would go to Reno, hang out on a dude ranch for 30 days, and then get divorced and then move on to whatever their next adventure was going to be. So this book, we have one woman who is very meek and mild, and she has gone to get a divorce. And then there's another woman at the ranch who's very mysterious, who shows up in the middle of the night one night. She has a black eye. She's very glamorous. She's very persuasive. And much in the way that always happens, the more meek person falls under the sway of the other person, and then they get them to do things that they wouldn't normally do. The writing is very good. It's very interesting. I've already read actually another book about a divorce ranch that was like more lighthearted and fun. This was like the dark side.
Mm.
So it's very interesting.
All right, Amy.
I'm going to talk about a new release. And when this episode airs, I think it will have come out earlier this week. It comes out May 14th, I believe. It's called I'm Afraid You Have Dragons by Peter S. Beagle. And Peter S. Beagle, I think he's in his 80s now, but he wrote The Last Unicorn, which is considered by many to be one of the top 10 fantasy novels of all time. I have not read that book, nor have I read any of his books, because I'm generally not a fantasy fan. And it's only been recently that I have started to read more of that genre. But this one sort of intrigued me because it had to do with dragons. And I do sort of have a
dragon thing?
I have a little bit of a dragon thing. So this one intrigued
me. Did she reluctantly admit?
I don't know. So this is basically a high fantasy fairy tale. You know, there's a princess who's looking for a prince, and she lives in this kingdom of Belmontaine, it's called. And she sent most of her suitors away except for one, Sir Reginald, who's a crown prince of Corvinia, which is a province like a day's ride away. And her name is Cerise. And the castle's a little bit shabby, or she feels like it's a little shabby. She wants to freshen it up a little bit for this crown prince to come. And apparently they have a dragon problem. And so
when that happens.
I know, when you have a dragon problem. So they call in.
Is that the reason for the shabbiness, or?
No, I just think, you know, they just haven't wrapped it up.
While
right?
we're freshening things up, yeah. we should probably deal with this dragon issue that we've sort of let go.
So they call in their exterminator. His name is Gaius Aurelius Constantine Heliogabulus Thrax, but you could just call him Robert.
I think I will.
And he's 18. His father was the exterminator before him, and he's taken over his father's job, but he really doesn't like it. What he wants to be is a prince's valet, but he does it because it's the family business. But the thing is, he doesn't like exterminating dragons. He really loves dragons, and he doesn't really want to kill the dragons. But he comes in, he gets rid of most of the dragons that are in the house, and dragons come in all sizes. There's like small ones that can fit, you know, in between the walls, and then there's like huge ones that are the size of a castle.
Smog.
Right.
Yeah.
So the crown prince pulls him aside and says, could you help me with something? And what it happens to be is that before he can marry anybody, he has to do some kind of heroic act to impress his father. So he wants Robert to teach him how to fight a dragon. You know, you have your princess, you have your prince, you have your unexpected hero, and then there's also a wizard. It's a very light, funny book. I really enjoyed it. The princess can kind of take care of herself. She doesn't need anybody to save her. So that was nice. I was a little worried about a book written by an 80-year-old man that it
fall back into the damsel
a little bit, but I felt like he did a pretty good job with that. And the nice thing about this book is it's only 288 pages.
That's a lot to pack into 288
well
pages.
The nice thing is, if you're like me, the problem with a lot of fantasy sci-fi books is that they're huge, and I don't want to make a commitment to something like that that I'm not sure I'm even going to like. So this is a good way to try it. 288 pages. I read it super quick. It was a fun, fairly light read. And
so a good summer read.
A good summer read. And I would recommend it. So again, the name of that is I'm Afraid You Have Dragons by Peter S. Beagle.
All right. So many books. So many books to add to TBRs and
writing furiously.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
For show notes for any episode, go to our website at perksofbeingabooklover.com. We're also on Instagram at Perks of Being a Book Lover Pod and on Facebook at Perks of Being a Book Lover. Just send us a message, go to our website, and click the contact button.
Because Amy is eternally curious, she probably wants to know what you think. Do you like our show? What are you reading? Do you have any plans this weekend? Me, not so much. So you can send us a message and chat her up, or let a friend of yours who is your complete opposite know that they should give us a listen too.
Finally, a huge thank you to Forward Radio 106.5 FM, a grassroots community radio station in Louisville, Kentucky. You can find our show there, live or in archives, at forwardradio.org.